Yo, what's up? Welcome to the Kinda Funny Patreon AMA for the month of November, I'm assuming. I'm your host, Blessing Adioji. Joining me is Nick Scarfino.
Could have gone either way. Could have also been October. We're not quite sure.
I was like, is this posting end of October or is it posting beginning of November? There's only one person who knows, and that is the one and only Joey Noel. This is fun because I feel like I don't think I've ever done one-on-one content with you.
I don't think we have. We did a psych review, I think, one time, but I think someone else was in that.
Actually, I don't know. Wow. You know what? I think that was like an episode of Screencast where there was a psych segment. It wasn't like a psych.
We should do more of those. We should talk about psych more in this office.
I'd totally be down to do like either a psych in review where it is we go through the psych movies, or if it is a season review where we go back and watch seasons of psych. The only thing is that we'll have to like create time to do that.
You know how like, you know the Scrubs podcast where they go through every episode of the Scrubs?
Oh, yeah.
And they do that? I feel like we should do that for psych. I feel like I'm sure nobody has thought to do that.
I feel like if we send tweets, like if we have Greg or somebody send tweets to Dulé Hill and the man who plays James Roday.
Yeah.
And go, hey, look at our studio. We have a cool video wall. Yeah. Come through and let us host like the psych rewatch podcast. There's a good 15% chance that we can make that happen.
I would love to do that. I think we should make that happen. I mean, Greg is ballsy enough to tweet at James Gunn to ask him to write a Superman movie. We can make this happen.
Have you seen the latest thing where he's been tweeting at Chloe Grace Moretz?
I saw this morning.
Kick-Ass. That's...
Yeah, I saw him ask on Slack for all of us to help get that out with our blue check marks, and I'm like, I don't want any part of this. I refuse to. And I'm sticking by that.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to bother Chloe.
No.
I feel like she's doing
good work. We don't need to drag her into this muck.
We do want to drag the audience into this AMA because, of course, this is the show where you write in, get questions to us, we host. We have a different pairing. Each episode happens once a month. And, of course, today you get me and Nick. So let's start off with Marion, who writes in and says, hey, guys, Nick, I always love to hear you talk about movies. Mm-hmm. What movie or movies made you fall in love with films?
What movies made me fall in love with films or continue to make me? I mean, I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s. I had the great privilege and virtue of growing up during the beginning of blockbuster cinema. And so I caught all those great movies, all those great Spielberg movies predominantly, all the great Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, all the great movies of the 80s that really made me fall in love with film. And those were just an escape. You know, I grew up in Riverside, which is not a lot happening in that town. And so every weekend was all about going to the Video Whiz up in the Canyon Crest and renting movies to the point where I could have probably gotten a job there with how much I knew that system when I was a kid. So that's, you know, it's the 80s and 90s really were the formative years for me. And that's what made me want to go to – and Kevin Smith, guys like that, made me want to go to film school.
Was there any, like, individual movie that you're like, oh, shit, all right, I love this so much that I might just love the genre or just the medium?
There's a number of movies that are like that. I think that the movies that made me fall in love with movies are, I mean, anything in the 80s, really, anything that came out that really, during my formative years, you know, I'm trying to think of, I mean, I always go to the worst movies possible, like RoboCop and shit like that, and Predator and stuff, which I love. I love those movies. But the movie that made me want to make movies was Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and Clerks. Those are the movies where you started learning more about the person that made the movies, which is Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith. And then that was really eye-opening for me because it was the first time in my life I ever really thought, wait, someone other than Steven Spielberg makes movies?
Yeah.
Like, wait, and you can just do this for like a low budget and you can just will this thing into existence.
And it can be cool and it can have its own style. And
yeah.
Like you can, when you watch a Guillermo del Toro movie, for example, like you can tell it's a Guillermo movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a level of auteurship that goes into that. So that was really cool for me to learn. And unfortunately, I learned a little bit too late in life because I think if you want to go to film school, you kind of have to set that up a lot earlier than while you're already in college. So, you know, that's something that I learned a little later. But I'm glad I came to it eventually.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Fix Wolves writes in and says, Bless, I know you're a hip-hop fan. Out of curiosity, are you into any more of the alternative styles of the genre? Artists like Death Grips, JPEG Mafia, or Clipping? Considering there are some David Diggs fans that are part of KF, I would recommend checking Clipping out if you haven't already since he is the MC. I've heard of Clipping. And, of course, I love David Diggs just because, you know, I love Hamilton. And I've loved he was in that one movie that takes place in SF with all the spoken word poets. I forget what it's called. Something Lighting. No, not Moonlighting, actually. It's a little movie that Tim Geddes loves.
I was like, Moonlighting is probably not.
Yeah, Moonlighting is not the one.
Not the one you're thinking
but
of.
But it's the one that's about the gentrification.
Is the last black man in San Francisco?
No, but it's, like, adjacent to it. Like, that's almost it, but it's not that movie.
Okay.
But people know the one I'm talking about.
It's not Bodied, is it? He loves that movie.
No, okay. It's not Bodied. I'll look it up after I answer this. But, yeah, I do love David Diggs. I never got around to checking out Clipping. In regard, one, shout out to your username. So, like, I don't know if you know the reference of I'ma Fix Wolves.
Hmm.
Back in 2016, I want to say, Kanye West dropped his album, The Life of Pablo.
Okay.
Comes out, and, like, Kanye West is at the point of his career where he's stopped giving a fuck. Right, he's like, you know what? People are going to buy my music no matter what. I'm going to tell people this is my release date and then not put out my album and not say anything until the day after where I'm like, oh, no, I'm still making it. I'm still working on it. Don't worry. It's going to come out in 2 days. And then 2 days comes and he doesn't put it out. Like, that was sort of his album rollout for pretty much every Kanye album since 2016. Mm-hmm. But this is one of the first times he was doing it that way. And he finally puts the album out, like, randomly after an episode of SNL where, like, he performs at it. He's like, cool, album's out now. Or, like, I think it was, like, out tomorrow or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
He does that. Album comes out, and people are liking the album, but there's one song on there, Wolves, that he had teased before that, like, people had heard versions of. And the version of Wolves that was on the album wasn't the same. And it was, like, it was missing, I want to say it was missing, like, a Frank Ocean verse. It was missing, like, certain mixing things. There was an artist that was originally on it that wasn't on it in the final version. People were like, oh, man, I don't know how I'm feeling about this version of Wolves. Days later, Kanye just tweets, I'ma fix Wolves. And he, like, does this thing where he's like, yo, I'm basically going to do, like, album live updates for the first time. Like, the way we do them for video games, right? He's like,
cool.
I'm going to push a 1.01 of my album. And he did that. Like, he changed the song, and he fixed Wolves. And then later on, he added new songs to the album. And he just, like, kept updating his album like
that's
he was updating
awesome.
A video game.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so, like, that's where I'ma fix Wolves comes from, just from that Kanye tweet.
There's one poor guy with a CD. He's like, fuck.
It's like, ah, shit.
I should have gone digital.
Yeah, it's like, ah, shit, I got the original version. Which also is kind of
cool.
Kind of cool, like,
actually,
it's a different version of the song.
Yeah.
But I remember listening to that version of the song and being like, this hurts my ears. Like, there are certain tones that they're hitting in this song that sounds like nails on a chalkboard, where I'm like, this is terrible. But to the question of, am I a fan of more alternative styles of the genre? I don't really fuck with Death Grips and JPEG Mafia that much. I think Raj Pokorny really does. For me, when it comes to the subgenres of rap that I'm into, I'm more into the backpack rap, which is more like 2000s, I guess, like, you know, old school Kanye West or Lupe Fiasco, the rappers that would rap about, like, college life or rap mm-hmm. about more conscious topics or, like, politics and be a little bit more smarter is not the word, but I guess more, like, politically and socially relevant mm-hmm. with the raps. That's, like, one of the subgenres that I've always been into when it comes to rap. There's that. There's in, like, the last 6-7 years, I've gotten super into UK rap, specifically grime.
Interesting.
Yeah. UK rap is, like, on another level because it's gangster rap, but gangster rap is they use really just flowery vocabulary.
And they had cool accents.
Yeah, and they had, like, cool accents, right? And so, like, think of, like, the hardest gangster rap you ever heard, mm-hmm. but it's Gary Whitta.
Yeah.
That's saying
God,
that shit.
God, I'd pay for that.
Yeah.
I'd pay for that album right now.
1,000%. And, like, they have their own, you know, sort of flair to it, too, where, you know, the beats have a lot of heavy bass. It's a lot of, like, fast-paced style of rapping,
mm-hmm.
and I fucking love it. Like, I can't get enough of it regarding that, right? Like, artists like Skepta, Stormzy, Dave, I'm super into. And then there's also Little Sims, who isn't grime, but is more conscious UK rap. She has one of my favorite albums of the last 5 years, Grey Area, which I would recommend to anybody. And then her follow-up album called I Might Be Introvert is also excellent as well. But yeah, I'm into that subgenre. I don't really fuck with, like, what people call mumble rap as much. Like, I don't hate on it. I think it's valid. I think it's great. But it's also not one that I automatically flock to.
Mm-hmm.
There might be artists here and there, like Juice WRLD I'll listen to. But it really depends on the artist when it gets down to that. But yeah, aside from that, also just pop rap in general, you know, I'll listen to. But yeah, like, I'm not a Death Grips person. I do like Brockhampton, like certain artists like that. Tyler, I like. But yeah, like JPEG and Death Grips are a little bit more, that's like fusing rock and rap in a way where I'm like, I don't know if this is for me, but you know, I know it's for somebody and I don't hate on it. I think it's cool. I just don't listen to it. Well, let's see here. Let's bring in this question from Sean Ballou, AKA Shabe Raven,
mm-hmm.
who says, Nick, how did you convince D to appear briefly in Waiting for the Punchline? Or tell us the truth. Was that an actress that was hired to pose as your wife?
That's an old joke. You know, she doesn't really want to be on camera with stuff, and I have to respect that. But we were able to get her to be in, like, one little shot, and that was her comfort level. It was just a conversation we had. I mean, she's, you know, she doesn't really do what we do. She doesn't love social media. She doesn't do any of that stuff. So I don't ever want to pressure her into, you know, doing any of this stuff, because I know there's a lot of anxiety that comes from most normal people who don't pick this as a career. So yeah, we had a conversation about it, and the director, Matt Hames, just was really nice and was like, well, you know, you'll see, we'll shoot it. If you don't like it, we'll cut it. Not a big deal. We'll show you it before it goes out. And that's always the best thing to tell someone, because that immediately puts the power back in their hands.
Yeah.
You know, if you say, like, hey, we're going to do the scene that you feel vulnerable in. If you don't like it, it's gone. Then people feel more empowered to do that. And that was that's what we did, and she was totally fine with it.
Hell yeah. And then Shay Raven also says, Bless, if you could make a show for the regular Kinda Funny channel, what would it be? Also, before I even answer that, Blindspotting was the movie I was thinking of with Daveed Diggs in it.
See, I was going to say that, but then Bodied came out, and it was a B.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That had Janina in it, right? No. Yeah, Blindspotting had Janina in it.
Kavankar?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Wait, Blindspotting?
Mm-hmm.
That might be right. That might be right. But yeah, the show that I'll make for the regular Kinda Funny channel. Probably a show about music. I think that'd be fun. That's something that we don't currently have, right? We do our reviews every now and then if there's, like, a really anticipated album that we're all super into. Like, we did the Kendrick Lamar album review, and years ago we did the Eminem one when his album came out in 2020. But I think it could be fun to do, like, a quarterly show, maybe a monthly music show that is us just talking about whether it is just rap music or music in general, depending on who'd we get on there. I think that'd make for fun conversation. I think the only thing with it is that, like, how much of our audience would be interested in it. Like, even for the Kendrick Lamar thing, that's one of the most anticipated albums of the year. And that got, like, not many views compared to what we usually do.
It's just not what we do here, unfortunately. But, you know, that's not saying we can't be. You'd have to build an audience for that.
Exactly.
That's not saying that you can't do that. It's just most people tune in for dumb reviews about movies and video games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Eric here writes in and says, hey, guys, what was the moment you actually feel like a real adult? As dumb as it sounds, my wife and I got a Costco membership, and I kind of actually feel like a real adult, and I can't explain why. Thanks for what you guys do, and I'm so stoked for all the content to come from the spare bedroom. This is a fun question because I think we're both in very different stages in life in terms of our adulthood, right?
Yeah.
I'm 28, you're 42.
I knew it was coming. The second it started off. I'll be honest with you guys, I still don't feel like an adult.
Hell yeah.
There's a lot of things I do that are adults. There's a lot of things that I do that are highly professional, and those I'm very proud of. But I still sometimes when I get in my car feel like I shouldn't be allowed to drive.
Mm.
And I think that's very important for what we do, and I'm trying to hone that as much as possible. Because let's be honest, we like a lot of stuff that could be construed as childish, video games,
fair
Marvel
enough.
Movies. But I think it's important to come at those from those perspective, because when you're a kid, the life is full of wonder. And if you let it, life will beat that out of you. And I think it's important to kind of keep that sense of wonderment. So I don't ever feel like I'm an adult until I have to pay a tax bill. And then I go, fuck being an adult. It sucks.
God, I feel that so much.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Like, I think I'm similar in terms of I don't feel completely like an adult. And it's funny because I think part of that is just that I think I present fairly young. Like, anytime I say I'm 28, I think people are like, oh, really? I thought you're 22 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I still get carded whenever I go and drink, right? Like, I think, one, I look young, and I guess I wear chains and gold watches and stuff. That probably makes me seem young as well. And I wear Donkey Kong shirts. So, yeah, like, our job.
It's mostly the Donkey Kong shirt.
It's probably mostly the Donkey Kong shirt,
Everything
right?
else is pretty dialed in. It's the Donkey Kong shirt that's like, this guy's young. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I think part of what we do kind of, you know, asks for us to be tuned in with, like, the younger sides of ourselves, right? And like play into the fact that, yeah, we're talking about video games, we're talking about movies, we're talking about Marvel movies for that matter, and stuff that I think people who are younger might be into, but then also people associate with nostalgia and childhood and chasing their youth and all that stuff, right? Both exciting, happy, and sad a little bit. But at the same time, I think for me, it comes down to what my daily rituals are and become. Like, funny enough, yesterday I did a thing that made me feel like an adult, and that was cook. You know, like,
cooking definitely makes me feel like an adult.
Yeah, like,
not so much the cooking, it's the cleaning up of the kitchen afterward. I'm
yeah,
like, oh, I hate this part, but I gotta
dishes.
Do it. It's gonna be stinky.
God, like, I'm somebody who, you know, I've wanted to get better about my cooking, and pandemic made me get real lazy, where I was like, you know what, man, let me just DoorDash everything.
Yep.
You know, like, if I'm saving money on gas, I'm saving money on not eating out as much. Let me just DoorDash every single day.
Exactly.
And that turned into a ritual that I've been trying to break now that we're, you know, going to the studio, leaving our houses every day. I I'm not as inclined to order DoorDash every day. That said, I have been going to restaurants a lot around the area, like getting fast food. I've been eating a lot of Popeyes, and I just had Jack in the Box today. So,
man, I had Burger King yesterday. But even that's like cheaper than DoorDash. I mean, yes. When you DoorDash stuff, you're literally paying like $10 more for whatever it is you're getting.
100%.
Which is ridiculous, especially when like it behooves you to order more because the delivery fee is, you know, is just ridiculous no matter what. But it's to the point where we ordered so much on Postmates that my wife was like, I can't put this on my phone. If I do, this will take me down a road that there's no coming back from. And I agree with her. So now it's just on my phone, and I'm like, I can't order for you because I have to be in a specific like radius of our house, and we're too far away. And so I was like, nope, sorry, we have to go out and get food with your own 2 feet, which is nice.
Yeah. The other day, Michael, my roommate, made steak. It was like steak, rice, and greens. Mm-hmm. And I ate that. I was like, man, home-cooked food tastes really good, you know, like way better than DoorDashing food every single day.
Yeah.
And I'm now like, I've grown this craving for homemade food now that is good for me because that means that now I am putting in the effort to go, all right, you know what, man? It doesn't take that much effort to go to the store and buy some ingredients and come back and cook something. So yesterday I was like, you know what, man? I'm going to cook stir fry because I remember my sister cooking stir fry for us all the time growing up. And I was like, if she can make it, I'm sure I can figure it out. It's probably not that hard. And, you know, I went on Google, typed in what goes in a stir fry, went to the store, picked that stuff up, came back, and like, you know, it wasn't a perfect stir fry. It was actually pretty good, but it, like, I fucked up the rice a little bit. Like, you know, there's things about it that were imperfect, but when I ate it, I was like, you know what, man, this is cheaper and better, and probably, you know, stir fry's not healthy, but healthier than
Pan Express. You know,
yeah,
you cook it at home.
Exactly, and I felt really good about it, and like, it actually made me feel like an adult, and that's something that I'm trying to chase more. You know, I want to cook more, and like, even cleaning more frequently is a thing that I'm trying to do.
Yeah, that is the one thing that I do a lot of. I'm going to split this mic between us real quick.
Yeah, split it.
There we go.
Let's see. I'm going to bring in this question from Mr. Hawks 182. He says, this is a question for Nick.
Okay.
As the oldest, most seasoned, and oldest member of Kind of Funny.
It's
said oldest twice. I have a question that you can only answer. Back in the halcyon days of 1989 through 1991, I'm assuming you were in your mid to late 30s.
Wow.
How in the actual fuck did you all hear Mill Vanilli sing, then hear them speak, and then just collectively think, yeah, that's about right? What was in the water in the late 1900s that allowed that to happen?
Okay. First off, we were all stupid. We didn't know. Mm-hmm. We didn't know. You don't know what you don't know. And that's the scariest thing in life is when you realize that this is a thing, you go, what else could possibly be pulling the wool over my eyes? And we've had a lot of watershed moments since then. But yeah, Milli Vanilli fucked me up, I'm not going to lie. And I don't think I've ever been the same.
Milli Vanilli fucked me up is the hilarious sentence to say. Jared Meyer says, Nick, are there any mistakes or missteps that the business has made or decisions you haven't agreed with that you're willing to share? Not in a gotcha sort of way, but I just want to hear how you handled it and what you learned from it.
No, I mean, we haven't – no, there's no missteps or mistakes that's like – that you guys probably haven't heard of already. The real hardest thing that we've dealt with over the last 3 years was the studio because, candidly, we thought it was going to take a year. It took three, and it costs a lot – it costs a lot more than we thought it was going to cost. And that's just that's not a story you're not going to hear from anyone that did anything over that did a construction project over the pandemic. Everyone suffered from that, so I don't even feel – necessarily right talking about it because other people had it way worse. But honestly, this was one of those projects that we were like, yeah, listen, we said we're going to do it. And we knew it was going to be great once it was launched, but it was a pain in the ass to get all this done. And I'll never forget, there was one moment where the contractor called me and was like, hey man, just so you know, like the cost of wood is tripled what it used to be. And so he's like, we got to build this with metal. And that's going to be 2.5 times what you thought the price was for some of this construction that we were going to do. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you do it. You get the experience. And if we had this whole thing to do over, I think we probably would have done it slightly different in that I probably would have not done it during a pandemic.
Yeah.
I think that could have been that it could have been a lot less stressful. But the end result is undeniable. And I think we're all pretty happy here. So hopefully we fucking continue to kick ass.
Hell yeah. Jared also says, blessing, now that you've been in the industry for a while, what are some of the harsher realities of being there that you may not have been expecting? That's a good question. Harsher realities. I think for me, it's the people are right. Well, people were right about like how annoying like bad comments can be sometimes in terms of like either stuff getting under your skin or like the amount of people that'll take stuff that you say in good faith, right, and take it and go, oh man, this idiot said the X, Y, and Z thing. Oh man, how can they say that when they did this or they said this, right? And like that was something that I remember listening to podcasts, and I would hear that come up every now and then of people, of like hosts being annoyed with comments or whatever, or like, you know, whatever the complaint would be of like, oh man, like this person said this, I can't believe like these people think this about me. You know, it'd always be the thing of like, oh yeah, like when I'm in the industry, I'm just gonna ignore it all. I'm just not gonna read it. Gonna let it flow off my shoulder. And as soon as I got here, the first 3 months of working at Kinda Funny, I used to read every single comment on every video I was on, right? And I would even do the thing where I scroll to the bottom, because always the bad comments are at the bottom of whatever thing you're reading, whether it is the bottom of YouTube or the bottom of your like Twitter replies. And so I would always like go and I'm like, all right, let's see what's at the bottom. And that was so unhealthy. And it was like it was a habit that I had to really force myself to break. Right. Like now I have a hard rule for myself where I don't read YouTube comments. I don't read Reddit. Right. I read Twitter. And that's because like, usually if you go far enough to, like, at me on Twitter, sure, you can get to me. Like, why not?
Yeah. Pop it up on my phone.
Yeah, like, it's going to – I'll let it pop up. Yeah. And, like, you know, I don't completely hide myself from it necessarily, right? Like, if I really want to see the comments of something, then I'll go and see it. But I made a hard commitment to, like, not read everything and fill my mind with the negativity because, like, I think for a moment there, I was a bit, like, addicted to the negative comments and addicted to the negativity, and that had, like, a bad effect on me. So that was a pretty harsh reality for me.
That's a good perspective.
Yeah. Let's see here. Man, well, people are asking about disagreements. And the second question where, like, somebody's like, oh, man, how have you dealt with disagreements that have occurred with Kinda Funny? And for me, I think any disagreement I've had, I've probably talked it through.
Same way we would. I mean, just have candid, honest, open conversations with people and express your feelings in a way that is respectful, and that's hopefully all you can do.
Yeah. Let's see. All right, I'll pull this one. Shifty Lou says, "Hey Nick and Bless, congratulations on the new studio launch. Got to watch a lot of the stream live, and the place looks epic. With everyone at the studio, it's natural that people will get to interact more than they ever did before. Do you guys plan on doing any group activities utilizing the studio that is not for content? Thanks for all the laughs and good times, Shifty Lou."
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, we have a big table. We toyed around with the idea of like doing holiday parties and stuff here, but I don't think we've gotten quite to that point yet. I think a lot of the stuff we're doing right now is just kind of getting our feet wet with how we're going to utilize the studio and ironing out all the small technical kinks that we're running into, which I'm actually shocked and surprised, knock on a particle board, is not as many as I thought it was going to be. But honestly, I think we're all just readjusting to the new norm that is coming into the studio. It's still a trip to me to park and walk in and see everyone in IRL.
Yeah.
And so that right there is a treat enough for me. I don't think I need any more than that. But if people want to do stuff like a Halloween party or something here one day, I think that'd be totally fun.
Yeah. One idea that I was throwing around, we've been doing trivia a little bit lately, and I've been talking about how I think at one point I want to host bar trivia, but I think it'd be extra fun if we can somehow make an event where it is like either it's a Patreon thing or like just a buy tickets kind of thing, and I host bar trivia from the studio.
That'd be fun.
You know, and like we have enough space in the actual set itself where you can get a bunch of chairs in there and have like, I don't know, 30 to 40, maybe 30 to 50 people in there and like actually host trivia and maybe use the video wall to display questions and all that stuff. I think that'd be really fun.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Liquid, let's see. Mushin writes in and says, "Good afternoon. As the number of fans get larger, the amount of followers get larger, and the amount of crew gets larger. Do you ever go back and explain to the newbies about OG reasons for calling the news the Roper Report, Baker's Dozen, and all the first generation stories?" It's funny because this is a lot of stuff that I have to deal with regarding like the KFGD rituals, right? And I guess like, you know, for kind of YouTube.com, it's kind of funny. A lot of it is like the Kinda Funny podcast, this table, you know, those rituals that have carried on since like year one or year negative one, right? Like, because a lot of stuff I think carries on from IGN.
From beyond, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I bring it up every now and then. Like, there was an episode of KFGD a couple days, maybe yesterday actually, where somebody wrote in with the question of, hey, what is or why do you say a Baker's Dozen? And also, like, what is the official list, right? Like, what are these things that you guys are doing? Mm-hmm. And I had Greg do the quick explainer. But it was stuff that I've not thought about in a while just because I grew up listening to Beyond and listening to the shows and kind of understanding what those rituals are. And it's one that I wonder every now and then about regarding trying to grow numbers of KMTD and trying to grow numbers of shows and going, man, I wonder, like, is it off-putting or is it delightful for new audiences to come in and, like, hear these random-ass, like, things and, like, go, oh, man, okay, they're doing a thing right here, right now that I don't understand.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Like, does that scare people away? Does that bring them in? But I think what's important about it is that our audience enjoys that stuff, and so that's who we're trying to cater to. But yeah, like I assume if you're writing in, it sounds like you already know what these things are, but I think the long and short of it is like Greg is a madman and he carries things forward from his youngin' days.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say is I think it's fun to have those little moments where the audience has to discover what they are. Right? We have these little traditions, these little phrases and these things that we do that I think is actually endearing. And when people come in, it makes them want to know more about what's happening with our content. And then the sad reality is when they learn the answer to it, it's just that Greg is insane.
Yep.
And every single time he says these things, and then immediately, it's like he says them and then tries to push them through the Senate to make them into law. And we're like, Greg, what the hell are you talking about? Let's never forget, if it wasn't for me, you guys would be called scumbags out there, not best friends. Greg wanted to call everyone that listened to our content scumbags. And I was like, I don't know if that's endearing everyone to us, if that's kind of the vibe that we want to be here. And he was like, you know what? Didn't think about it. Nick, you're right. You should be right about everything.
I'm sure that's exactly how he said it. That's exactly
something, it was something like that. I'm paraphrasing.
It's always him saying something too, and then like laughing at himself.
And
like
then, he goes, "Joey makes the t-shirts." And it's yeah. Like, well, there's a couple more moves that have to happen before this thing becomes a tradition.
Anthony writes in and says, "Hey, blessed Nick, I was hoping to get some advice on dealing with getting older." there's a lot of age questions in here. I don't know why.
It's always me.
I turned 39 this year and had a bit of a panic about this being my last year in my 30s. Nick, as someone who's over 40, do you have any advice for those of us that aren't handling it well?
I do, actually. I got good advice from a therapist one time. He said that maybe I'm having a midlife crisis, but I disagreed with that person. I would say that when you're 40, you actually have the opportunity to give yourself a little breathing room because your life is kind of, you know, you've probably accomplished a lot. So take a moment and look back on it and give yourself a little time to just, like, exist and live. Because I think you spend so much time in your 20s and 30s trying to get momentum and move forward as fast as humanly possible, climb whatever corporate ladder you're on or start whatever business you're doing or get, you know, as many followers as you possibly can and make as much content. And it becomes this rat race that you can easily get caught up in. And when I hit 40, 41, 42-ish, I kind of just thought for a second, you know, I'm going to take stock of my life. And I live a pretty cool life. I get to work with awesome people. I got a cool business. I live in a great part of California, which is a great state. And I got a great wife that loves me. And I can just give myself permission to be happy. You know, I can just relax and do this. And my therapist was like, I think that's what that's a midlife crisis. And I was like, well, then sign me up because I'm okay with this. Like, I'm okay with where my life has gone. And if this is what I achieve and continue to achieve at this pace, then I will look back on my life and think, that was a life well spent. That was pretty cool.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I'm 28. I'm going to be 30 in like a year and a half at this point. And it's the thing that does come to mind for me quite a bit in terms of, oh man, am I doing enough for where I'm at in my phase of life, right? And whenever I say that, my friends always laugh because like my friend group, I think everybody's older than me. I guess now I'm like, I'm towards the middle lower in my, in terms of age, my friend group. But yeah, because most of them are early 30s, they're like, bro, you're fine, you're young, like, you know, you look young, like, all, you know, all this stuff. But it's still one that every time I think about the fact that I'm about to turn 30, you know, I look back and I'm like, oh, where did the years go? And part of that, I think it was pandemic, you know, like pandemic started when I was 25.
That's wild.
Yeah, right? So like there's a couple years there where I was just at home and I felt like I wasn't living my best late 20s life.
That's so heartbreaking because I think the pandemic for me was actually like had some very positive things, namely that I got to spend more time with my wife. And I tell her this all the time. I was like, you know, in a weird sort of like silver lining to this horribly dark cloud that we had, we got almost another year together because now that I'm at the office, I see her once a week. But I was seeing her every day and that was so special. And, like, it's been actually kind of difficult to, like, not be around her. It's like I feel like I've almost suffered a loss, which is crazy to think. But to do that in my 20s was sucked. Yeah. Because I was out every night when I was your age. When I was 25, 26, me and the guys were just like, where are we going to drink? We hated it. Like, being at home was a sin. It was like, what? It's a Friday night and I'm at home? And then you had those moments where you got to stay home on a Friday night where you're like, I'm not feeling it or whatever. We're going out tomorrow night. And it was like it was a nice, like, pause. Like, it was a meditative moment where you got to just order some food and hang out and watch a movie. That was pretty cool. But, yeah, I imagine that would have sucked. But for me, 42, wife always home, everything I love right in my little sphere, and my work just being on this computer. My commute to work is 2 minutes. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is great.
And I like, you know, I have the beholder type stuff, right? But like, you know, I look at, I guess, different, like, you know, things like having a partner, right? Where I'm like, oh man, if there wasn't a pandemic, I probably would have been, you know, more active dating, right? And like being at home by myself, me and my roommate, right? Me and Michael, you know, just hanging out at home alone, right? Like for years straight, I think, you know, some of that stuff gets into my, oh man, am I progressing fast enough by the time I'm 30? But then I look at things like career, right? Yeah. And like, you know, I feel good about working at Kind of Funny, right? And like, I don't know, it's that thing of always wanting more and always wanting better and always wanting to be further along in life. But I think that probably applies to every single person.
And that's I mean, honestly though, like, that is something I struggle with a lot in my 20s, because it's really easy to compare yourself to everyone around you.
Yeah.
And especially when you've got a following on the internet. Some of the people around you have mega followings and they're doing way better than you. And it's so easy to get down on yourself and be like, I could be doing more. I could be doing more. The trick is to have that balance of realizing that you have a great job. You're a great person. You got great friends. A lot of people love your perspective on important issues. That's pretty good. That's a win. That's in the win catalog. Mm-hmm. So I think the important thing is like have that balance and keep moving forward in a way that makes you happy and not self-destructive or depressed. And that's definitely something I'm saying from my own experience, where I've been like really down on myself for being like, how come I haven't made a film yet? Why haven't I done this yet? Why haven't I done this stuff yet? And then you turn around and you take stock and you're like, actually, my life's pretty good. Yeah. It's going okay. Just put the effort in and hopefully, I think the key is, or the hard part is, enjoy the ride along the way.
100%. I'm going to ring in one more question from Max, who writes in and says, hey, Bless and Nick, congrats on the launch of the studio. My question is simple. How was the first week of being in the new studio?
The first week was, for me, a slow release of all of the tension and stress and, like, frustration that had built up to that studio launch. And, like, letting go of that was really, really hard for me, because I had to keep – me and Kevin, unfortunately, had to keep our guard up and, like, be on it for so long that I think it was, like – it was difficult. Mm. Like, we would get – I mean, we would – it was – this was a hard, hard, hard project. And so – coming in here and being like, wait a minute, we can just enjoy the day. Yeah. Like, we can just, like, I don't have a fire to put out somewhere, metaphorically speaking or physically speaking. And we can just hang out and get to do this. It's been cool, but there's a part of me that's like, what else is that? What's going to happen? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And so that first week, I think it wasn't until a couple days ago, really, which I think this is our second week now, yeah.
Yeah.
Where I kind of came in, like, last Monday or last Tuesday, and I was like, fuck, I feel like I can breathe now. And I finally can see the space as this cool thing that we all get to be a part of. And that gets me really excited for the next couple months and the next year.
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, I've had such a good first week. I mean, good aside from getting sick. You know, like, there's been the flu going around everywhere. But, like, you know, coming in for the first few days of that week and then, like, working from home the last couple, it was a good start of, oh, man, yeah, like, this is what it feels like to work around people. And, like, getting to work around Roger and Mike, you know, because I didn't get to be at the studio with them last time, right, because they got hired during the pandemic. But that plus being – having, like, this wider space that everybody's excited about. We all kind of have our own areas to ourselves, right? We're not cramped in into the apartment.
That's the best part.
Yeah. You know, I, like, being in that place, too, where it feels like we're still building what we want our own – work from work situation to be, right? Where I'm like looking at my desk and I'm like, oh man, all right, I got my Donkey Kong 64 case here. I got, you know, this picture of me as a picture of me doing a cosplay as shirtless Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, having that here, and like kind of building as I'm going of, all right, this is what working from the studio looks like, and this is what my day-to-day looks like in terms of schedule and all that stuff. You know, it's been such an interesting fun and interesting thing to figure out. Even, you know, my days while working from home started at 8 a.m with me sitting down and prepping KFGD and then like grabbing coffee. I'll drive Starbucks to get coffee and drive back home and then finish doing the doc and then, you know, host that show. Now it is, all right, I wake up, I'll prep half of KFGD from home. All right, cool. Now on my way to the studio, I'm going to grab McDonald's coffee.
Yeah.
You know, get to the studio, finish prepping, sit down, like grab the coasters, do whatever I need to do, sit down, you know, be ready to go. And having the in-studio energy, I think, adds so much more to the show that, like, I've been feeling really good about, like, the process of working from the studio, but then also just the quality of content. Also, I think it's raised, you know, both in the fact that you don't have to worry about Discord hiccups and like starting and stopping when people are talking and raising your hand and all this stuff, getting to just chime in a little joke while somebody else is talking and have that
and
work.
They can hear you in real time.
And they can hear you in real time. Nice. And like, you know, having having jokes be able to live better and like be delivered better. Yeah, I think everything about working in the studio this first week has been awesome, and I'm hoping that like it continues.
That was the thing for me too. Was I was like, there was this little voice in the back of my head that was like, I hope it's worth it. I hope when we get back there, the content's better.
Yeah.
And because I was like, people are so used to Discord, maybe they're used to this, maybe they won't want all that timing anymore. And that first show we did back, I was like, oh, this is way better.
Yeah.
This is so much better to be with everyone, and I think there's just a better energy in general across our content. So I'm happy we did it.
100%. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that has been your Patreon AMA for the month of either October or November. You'll figure out in the title that we have.
Could
for
be
this
December
one.
Also. We're not quite sure.
Could be December. This, yeah, we could be recording ahead for like next year sometime. We have no idea. We just walked in and started recording. I've been Blessing. That's been Nick. Of course, you can get this on patreon.com/kindoffunny and Kind of Funny Games exclusively. And stay here for way more content. We got a lot of stuff for you. We got Shitless. We got Kind of Feudy. We got hella cool content for you here. So go get that. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
Cool. That's the wrong mouse. It's this one. Stop recording.